I used up my one and only cork poem earlier, and this is a really depressing poem. It's actually about in my time there's a lot of shooting and so on and so on. So, death swung on our pantry door, braces of pheasant hung by their long spurs. I touched their molten feathers, wattles that flamed like fire, saw their pale milk-fitted eyes. Above them, barrels jutting over covets, the guns waited. As boys, my brothers shot tin cans lined up on walls, picked off nesting crows from chimney tops. Grown men, they aimed at the sky, birds fell at their feet. Pheasant flesh, the colour of saffron, adorned our dinner plate. Each succulent mouthful riddled with shot. We dislodged by probing tongues, transported to fingers, and side plates that tinkled small death knells.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you very much. You just witnessed a very wonderful poet who also won the Lestelle Prize last year. Fantastic. Next up, I'd like to invite up a very good friend of mine and really a cornerstone of what we're about at Ovail and a great poet from Cork, Mr. Billy Randall.
How's it going?
Good.
I paused there that I was up in Crow Park on Sunday and it was a fucking magical day, you know. It was brilliant, and I relate to a poem about football, but I actually haven't got one yet, but I'll have one next year for Culture Next 2011. But I was going to do a hurling one.
Oh, great.
It's my next best thing, you know. I mean, come on, throw me a bone here, people, for fuck's sake, right? I'm not a jukebox, this is a poem about the gods watching the hurling match. But it's during the off season, like, you know, the league, like January, February. So that's no weather for hurling. Why would he even be out there? There's no buns or anything. But anyway, you can't have a ball in that in those conditions, like. But this is that. It's a What were the? Oh yeah, it's pumped with God watching hurling match. Yada yada. Half time, God. It was half time. Aphrodite sashayed from the kitchen with the tartan tea tray. Hermes looked from the soiled dinner dishes to the paisley wallpaper to the telly and emitted a long sigh of boredom. Hurling, like most team sports, isn't much fun when you know how it finishes. And being God, they knew almost everything. Zeus absently strokes the remote, his lip curling in jaded disdain as Aphrodite places Twix mug in front of him. But to make matters worse, this was winter hurling, not the top salad bowl stadiums of summer, dressed on Sundays drenched in sizzling heat and sound, but they're somehow Soviet winter alter egos. Slabs of grey deserted masonry under an oppressive, apprehensive junta of cloud. Hermes unslumped himself suddenly in his threadbare armchair. "Let's repair," he said to his father, to the Bottoms Up Slut Club in Brighton. Take Katchka and Susanna upstairs for a private dance. Or what about this? Let's turn all the lights on and off in Calcutta all at once. Feast on chutney chapatis before gently molesting two Bengali princesses. In a dream, each will wake from pregnant with a gold-clawed swan. Or we could make of ourselves some glittering evanescence and mate with nebulae out at the galaxy's freezing edge. Leave them as sprawled eternities of pulsing want. Planet pregnant. Pregnant with stars. Or at least can we turn the station over to EastEnders, Hitler's henchmen, or can't fat and cunt. Hermes fell silent, fidgeted with a chocolate digestive, mumbled under his breath. Aphrodite began clatteringly carting the dishes to the kitchen. Zeus looked into the ripples in his dark brown tea. Hush, he said. The second half starting. Come on. I'm actually going to do one more, if that's okay.
Yes.
I just don't know if that was corking up, like, so, I want to do one, but the English market now, and if I kind of pause suddenly during the middle of it, it's not because I'm having a stroke or anything, it's just because I actually, it's just for dramatic effect, right?
That's what we do.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So, this is a poem about the market. I don't know if the place close to all our hearts, like, you know, so. For the grand olives and
fish,
cheese, and you have, you name it, girl. It's all over here. It's like a lot. It's very lot here, so yeah. The sun dried tomatoes. Sure, what cork man can't get through a week without a seed of sun dried tomatoes? As far from sundry tomatoes you were heard by.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Anyway, this is sort of a love poem about the English market. The fish scents are missing your nostrils again. The hake and bream smells slip away from the fish stalls and meander through the market in search of you. Through the bustling odors of the olive and cheese stands, past Mr. Bell's and the chicken inn, past Brednan's, the chocolate shop, and Durkin's, into stained sunlight, into Mutton Lane, into cake scents, and fag tangs, oblivion. I have folded this page round Marennes and Whitstables and sent them to Tyneside, so that when you slit the envelope open, their oyster scents might rise up, coil and collect themselves before crashing your sinonasal cavity like a breaker flooding a notched cave off Ballycotton in a gulch flushing surge of tunnels toward a silent center, a dripping center, a climbing wave, ravenous, salty. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Billy Ronzo. We still have space on our huge list here tonight. Singers City, we are staying open until 12:30. Next up, we have a regular out of ale, Mr. Niall Herriot.
Hello, everybody. Now, I'm not like Fergus, or Billy. I have to resort to my page. So bear with me. Well, I find them. These are just ones I dug up from five words collection I put together, having come here quite a number of times and tried this mugs game, the five word challenge. Anyway, I did enjoy it, I tell you. I won't bore you with the five words, that they're in there. Okay, so first one is the true story of the discovery of North America. A Cork volunteer from lovely Bantier was lost at sea while sipping tea and narrowly missed the grave on the abyss before stepping ashore in Newfoundland and saying to the natives, "Sure, this is grand."
Right.
Sorry about that. It's called A Girl Before Her Time. I should say A Woman Before Her Time. It was during my purple phase, after my training at the Crawford in the 50s, I met the love of my life, Katrina. She was posing in the nude for one of my best known pieces, Purple Lady Posing Starkers on Pan, which attracted a lot of attention at the time, and not a few irate parish priests and nuns, saying what hussy should be excommunicated for making a pure or impure spectacle of herself on Patrick's Bridge. When I told her what they were saying, she yawned, shivered, and said spontaneously, that was one of the words that was in there, "Oh, for God's sake, ignore those aegis and bring me a gin and lion." Disaster movie. When the floods came and cars not only floated down Panna again, but inebriated posts were trapped in the hayloft for 7 days and seven nights. Some people said it was the apocalypse. Let's enjoy it while we can. Others said, it's just the movies. Hollywood can do anything, like. These were the ostriches burying their heads in their pipes. Others believed in the power of prayer, but no matter how hard they prayed, the floods rose higher and higher, until all that was left of the centre of Cork, because the Elysian fields had subsided, was St. Finbar's spire. Now, I'll just finish off. One more. Mixed signals. On a liner from Cork to Louisiana, sipping coffee from a ceramic mug, I felt capricious when lovely Lana gave me a warm, seductive hug on a liner from Cork to Louisiana. Then from beneath my feet she pulled the feckin' rug when she told me sweetly that she was waiting for Diana. Wasn't I the mug on the way to Louisiana?
So you made it back from Louisiana? Next up, could we please invite Mr. Razor across?
All right.
I believe the criteria has to be written in corporate about talk shows. Three short pieces.
I trade your indulgence.
This is also written about the English market. 50 quid a day is it? And how many hours will there be? Ah, sure. 10.5 hours a day only. She'd see you through, said she. 10.5 hours a day, says I. How many breaks will there be? Ah, sure. You can stop at the top of the shop to take yourself some tea. And what about some safety gear to make me as safe as can be? Ah, sure. There's an old pair of boots should suit, as they once suited me. 10.5 hours a day, says I. 10.5, says he. Ah, sure. 50 quid and an old pair of boots. It's not enough for me. So I must go on and travel now this green and pleasant isle in search of an employer without avarice or guile. But I doubt that I will find one so, and I cry into my beer, because greed in a Catholic country is epidemic here. And remind me then about your man who came to be the professor of English in the UCC in the 50s or early 60s, who had to teach nuns about world literature and stuff like this. And he says, if you're going to criticise Cork, you have to be from Cork for a doc date. So I take my life in my hands for this one, lad, okay? It's called Geography is Not My Strong Point. Nuclear Free Cork? Now there's a laugh. I met your man in the pub and he showed me the photographs. It seems in the early 90s they imported some scrap, offloaded at Hall Boland for the lads with an Irish Steel. This was before this part. So anyway, the lads took the scrap and he put it through the plant and he turned it into shiny new girders to satisfy the Germans' demand. And then the lads took the girders and he put them on a ship and he sent them off to Germany. It might have been Brest-Litovsk or maybe Hajduk Split. As I said before, geography is not my strong point. So the lads washed their hands and they thought, job well done. So imagine their consternation when the girders were returned. It seems like the girders were well beyond the deal, because the German's Geiger counter went right up off the scale. What was the story? What was the score? The lads were really angry. It was a pretty nearly war. But there was one booker there, a good old friend of mine, and he read them out an article over from the London Times. It seems the bright sparks at Sellafield had knocked some buildings down and didn't want all that radioactive scrap just lying around. Who was responsible? Who was to blame? The management washed their hands of it. Sellafield did the same. Leukemia and cancer cut a swathe through all the lads, and nobody seemed to give a fuck. It's really very sad. And there's many a moonless, cloudless night when a harbour seems to glow, and nobody knows the source of it, but it's not from the lights of coal. I just want to do one more sort of thing in terms of balance, because I've been a bit critical, you know what I mean? Maybe you hear me on Edinburgh, which is the right one for me anyway. So, this is an immigrant's poem, because I'm an immigrant, so I wrote this poem, Immigration. It's called Number One St. Dominic's Terrace. Ah, Number One St. Dominic's Terrace, place of hope and heart, fresh start, new beginning, watershed. Clear and confused, used and unused. Tin of a whistle, giggle of kids, Velux windows overlooking private bits. Sing song of the accent, smell of the sea. Ah, Number One, St. Dominic's Terrace, you make a good home for me. Thanks very much. Hey.
Thank you, Rob, for reminding us of our childhood. John Sherry, yeah? Isn't that the other pillar of the Celtic world?
Yes.
It is, isn't it? Bermuda. Next up we have someone from way back in the Celtic cycle. in German, Germany, Ruskin Blues.
First of all, I want to say hi to Rob. It's really nice to meet the old slam poet here from 10 years back. There was a, used to be a slam in the Spalding Park, which is a brilliant event, kind of like this. And that's where I met Rob first. I'll start, from, I have three poems now that I'd like to read about Cork. I'm living here now since a while. And I too have an immigrant poem, which the regular O'Baileys already probably know, and I'll tell you all about it. It was written above the roofs of Cork at dusk of a beautiful summer day in McCurtain Street after a conversation with Aziz from Africa. Home. One. Home is always best, he said. But once I flew into migration, I forgot what home means. Always longing, always torn back, forgetting the reasons I'd left for. Home becomes always best, the open option, the last resort, a place to rely on, family, friends, and familiar ways. The swifts above the roofs of Cork and the sweet blackbird singing remind me of my little Hebrew time here this evening. Two. See the birds, he said. They're flying high. They're happy and free. And when they seek a place to land, they look out for a tree they like. One they find safe to call a home for the moment. Three. Once you fly away from home, into the journey of migration, you become a bird. Always on a way. So look out for a tree you like to call your home for the time. Thanks very much. The second one I'd like to read is called Cork Style. Blue-eyed and innocent, I arrive in Cork, the typical Irish dropping street lamps dimly illuminating the rugged streets at night. Once I owned these streets with my bike, and I owned those nights with my drum. At Tribes, still there, I treat myself to a death by chocolate. Now the pedestrian zone pushes the road aside, desymmetrizes the street, and over the gaping Dutch-style plain, now owned by skaters, those Italian steel scaffold street lamps towering. Cork is so European nowadays, so globalized, so stylish, it deserves my death by chocolate. Thanks very much. The next one is called Cork Bog. Down the road, the south ring on the map, on the way out to the ocean, we pass a metal bird. An artist from elsewhere has been awarded to put it there. Where once the bogs, dark, wild, and sludgy, spread their secretive subcutaneous dangers. A child, a boy, running down from his tempestuous family to the shelter of the bogs. Each patch of grass he knows, each path, each trace, each tree. And all the birds rising, hundreds, millions of winged voices, circling and settling. Gone now, dried out, wiped off that map for this motorway and a landfill, stinking dump gulls screeching. The boy is a man now. Every time he drives out that motorway, the south ring on the map, out to the ocean, past that metal sculpture of a bird, he cries the song of all those birds, growls in wrath and thinks, one day, that metal disgrace in all our faces, that ignorance of all their lost lives, one day, I'll have that.
like your Russian blue? Wow. That was a beautiful poem. Thank you very much. Just now, it's more Irish than German now, by the way. 10 years in court, you know, and that's pretty Irish. Right. Next up, another regular at O'Vale. Could we please welcome Mr. Seamus Harrington.
Well, belly cocking was mentioned, ball was mentioned, moving quickly along the course. The hunters slipped our vivid orange mooring all around us, water shimmers. On a sleepy Sunday morning, while we stash away the fenders in our wake, the dinghy's bobbing as we sway away the foredeck. Now the sinner seems to notice that a contemplative heron on a bowsprit he is perching. That old Kelvin runs forever, she's the sweetest in the harbour, not too smoky when she's warm, with a thirst that's rather meagre. Let me see, your fancy tackle must have cost a pretty penny, it's the latest carbon fibre. Skipper's busy in the wheelhouse, but it lifts the Jackie Dory. When I fix my autopilot, we can plot the shortest course to find your promised destination. It's the graveyard of a U-boat, take the wheel and navigate to Bullman Marker in the distance, dip for cod and frantic mackerel, or an isolated haddock. Don't say no to brill and turbot, or a shoal of migrant tuna. Everybody let me know if you see bait divining gannet on that sparkle of high water. We can fathom out the places where they congregate and linger. Hard astern for a moment, that's the signal, action stations. Ready, weapons for the swordfish, till the engine swelling silence, so eerie than the plaintive ring of clear and present danger. As a clapper bombs the casting, cause our bulbous bowhead rocks a buoyant apparatus, chained and shackled over bladder rack, a haunt of inshore ling and conger. Telltale bubbles as its spiral sinker tears a length of catgut from its urgent screaming ratchet. Gather round, we said the bosun, gotta tell a fishy story while we're holding our position. Not too closely pointed someone in a welter of excitement, with the angle of the dangles, nylon's almost sure to tangle. Here be scary monsters lurking, if we hook a longer fellow, then the lasted and the record will be broken, will be famous. Here's a summer school of anglers on our oceanic mission. Now the merry whistling kettle mimics jet trails off to starboard. Never mind the footsie index, hear the hoochie-coochie rhythm gently lapping past our transom. Hope a tasty titbit won't be stolen from my spinner, leaving empty lures as unproductive as the barest bottom section of a topless, butless mermaid. Workshop. The weekly sit at Monster Lit, where highbrows knit to standards fit. Quicksilver muse may rarely choose in ones and twos to air her views. Aghast the stairs, verbose the players, when hottest wares meet cold naysayers. As lines dissect, wrong words inflect, with scant respect, half colons pecked. Who'll interrupt with big rolls cupped, barge in, disrupt, before we've supped? Pick up the train of thought in vain, that prosaic strain may briefly reign. Loud caps or drops, split hyphens mopped, or cliches copped, italics locked. Syllabic sound, while temples pound, mnemonics nouned, last scans abound. IQs inferred, at least one third, as one concurred, or nibs demurred. Thank you.
There are some things in heritage, you know? I mean, Amargin is the Ireland's first ever poet, you know? He said, every second person is a poet. Not everyone is a poet, but every second person is a poet, you know? And every great ruling tribe in Ireland, or every great, you know, clan had a poetry clan that kind of supported it, and they were the poets, you know? You get the O'Briens, the Clare, and the McNamara's would be their poets. So the McCarthy's and the O'Dahlies would be their poets, you know. But of the Bear Peninsula, you get the O'Sullivans, right? And the Harringtons would be their poets, yeah. So there is Mr. Seamus Harrington over there. Next up to the open mic, another O'Vale regular, Lowy Bowick, and to Colin Scully.
Last winter I was working down in Kinsale in a large open plan office, and about 8 o'clock in the morning I was sitting in one corner, and over in the other corner there was a wheat, and I heard him welcoming a couple of his colleagues with the greeting, "What new, Centurions? What news of Cork?" So I thought it was a good line, so I decided to use it in the poem. I thought it was a misquote from Shakespeare, from one of Shakespeare's plays, obviously, "What news, Centurions? What news of Rome?" But I can't find out what play it was from. But nonetheless, I decided to write a poem in response.
You can see
there probably.
Yeah.
But I decided to write a poem in response to the question. So it's not funny, but this is nonetheless. "What news, Centurions? What news of Cork?" "Only the mossy green pavements and the tired slabs. The gullies wandering into iron grates, whose imprints solemnly betray their age, cast in Bristol or in Harrogate. Only the uncouth houses on the narrow streets. The shambles skylines with a hint of grey. The topsy-turvy roofs and gable ends, crawling up hills in ever-varying lines. Even the new and clean edifice confounds the eye. The glass constructs and blue metal frames, tarpaulin green, copper domes and plates, vie with exotic timbers and panelled walls. None of them know their place amid the red and white, sand and limestone structures of the past. Aspiring towers cast long shadows in the river. Elysian dreams, well short of Elysium. What of its people? What news of them? As you left them, Council, except they've changed. Swollen in numbers since your last campaign. Now every tongue on earth can be heard. Close your eyes on Marlborough Street and listen. I hear them, the tongues mixing. The brittle patter of panel with the foreign threads. I know their songs so well and ask. Are they happy with their new phone well? Their ivory towers, their elegant lanes. They are still an open tumbled people, children of country folk a generation gone. Crude laughter still falls hard from open windows. Sarcasm envelopes their mother talk. They still walk with the unsure gait of deprivation, though decades have fallen since it last held them in its grasp. Their sad eyes and rough ruddy faces speak more of passengers than of the know. They celebrate as well as ever. When their teams win, crowds gather in Dawn Square, Parnell Square. They sing and drink high praise into the early hours, then leave the forlorn, rain with dingy streets, strewn with death. Thank you.
Thank you, Colin. Next up, I think it first to avail, Mr. Dermot Fitzgerald. Dermot Fitzgerald, you there? You're behind me.
This poem kind of does have a core connection. It was a publication called Poets in the Painter, and it's based in a gallery in Castletown by Herden, it's called Middlecourt Gallery. And they had this idea that if you came to the gallery, you saw a number of paintings and sculptures, and that was supposed to inspire you, and you wrote a poem based on either one or a few of them. So I did that, I went to it. It's a very good gallery, I recommend you going to it. And I basically wrote a piece of haiku, and then I ended on tanka. You probably know what a haiku is, but a tanka is basically a five-line haiku. It's longer, and there it's called Millcote Gallery Sequence 3. I read it twice because they're quite short. clown keeling over, a spider wrapping a thread around its neck with arms. Enclosed in church-like wall, Star Bethlehem, glistening to the full silence. Stone Venus flytrap flies down in its welcoming mouth. A big ball with no eyes or ears, anonymous face, with speech frozen in its lips. Tall carved dandelion threaded with metal pods, a supernova of seeds. Stooping low, knees out and straining arms, girl holds a ball about to slip from her fingers, the world in her care. Sorry once more. Clown keeling over, a spider wrapping a thread around its metal arms. Enclosed in church-like wall, Star of Bethlehem, listening to the full silence. Stone Venus flytrap flies down in its welcoming mouth. A big ball with no eyes or ears, anonymous face, with speech frozen in its lips. Tall carved dandelion threaded with metal pods, a supernova of seeds. Stooping low, knees out and straining arms, girl holds a ball about to slip from her fingers, the world in her care. I'll read two more if you don't have a cross connection. Okay, this one's called Invitation. The moon is like a radiant eye. Shrubs form in silhouette a row and light scatters through into small pools. The grass ceases to tingle my folded legs as I feel an invitation to a silent dance. I see myself head bowed, toes pointed 3 feet off the ground, swaying like a loose pendulum. Repulsed by the pulling, I run back into the kitchen. Stalling at the window, I float out, pulsing to her light. I'll just do one more for you. And this one is called Settling. Seaweed is stubborn here, and the dipping waves wash over a confetti of rusted pebbles and stones. Who knows what stories these stones can tell? If I smash them with questions, their shards will remain faithful to silence. The waning sky brings thoughts of my sister to me. I wish I could clasp her hand with my hand. But really, I must meet myself kindly and dream of who I'm ought to be and gain somehow a sense of harmony.
And there are four people left on the open mic, so if you'd like to get your name on here, please can you shout. Anyone like to say a poem? No? Would anyone like to be given a poetry book and just be able to walk up to the mic and open it on whatever page and just read a poem? Anyone like to do that? No? Well, if you feel like doing anything poetically challenging in the next half an hour, please let me know. Next up to the open mic, please, I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine and a supporter of Avail from the very beginning. In fact, another cornerstone of Avail, what it's about, where it's from, Jennifer Matthews.
And I have one poem, and it's not by me. It's by a woman I met last year who is a true Corkonian. She was born in Zimbabwe. She has a couple of kids and will grow up with a Cork accent. And she's brilliant. Unfortunately, she couldn't be here. I think she's probably taking care of them. So I wanted to read her poem. It's about Ireland and living here. It's called Land of Four Emotions. It's green and wet. Not for long. It's brown and gray, not for long. It's cold and frosted, not for long. It's dusty and windy, not for long. It's a land of four emotions. I have treaded on her with bare feet. I have treaded on her with boots on. I have treaded on her in stilettos. I have also driven on roads rocky and dusty tarmac. I have slept on a reed mat. I have slept under the stars. I have slept in three or four stars. No wonder that I am a wreck of emotions, crying, laughing sometimes, but not for long. Her name is Nairado Masunda. I'm sure I'm butchering her name, but she's brilliant, and more from her in the future, I'd say.
It's really nice to pick up someone else's poem and just read it out. Yeah?
Yep.
It's great. Right? Even if you're by yourself in your own home, or just in your own moment, when you think to yourself, what am I going to do, you know? What am I doing? Well, it's not a game. No. I want to do something different. Pick up a poetry book, open it on whatever page, and just read it out into space, into nothingness, into everythingness, into nature, into existence. You know? Existence will listen to you. Believe me, it's great to read a poem. If you'd like to read a poem, I'll hand you a book. You can put it open on any page and read a poem. We have three people left. Now I'm going to take this out and walk home with the microphone. And I'm going to stop. Next up, could we have reading from a book of poetry? And you can read two poems if you like, for three, Mr. Andrew Lang, who I think was an archetype, but he's an architect. Actually, recently, the realized poet, Mr. Andrew Lang.
Very interesting. Paul came downstairs, like I believe they used to do in the press gangs, you know, and he was kind of some press gangs into this. The second reason for choosing this particular poem is that it's a subject that I think you should all know about, because it's about shit. And I had a really worrying experience in the summer, and this is very important, because I think all of us know that if you see something kind of red, you think cancer or something bad. In my case, it was just a lot of beetroot. The third reason for this poem is by Adam Wyatt, a very good poet. And about a month ago, we had the kind of same dress experience. This jacket here, I bought it in TK Maxx, okay? It's supposed to cost about £600, supposedly, and I bought it for about 40 quid. And he had the same thing on, and we were very embarrassed. So Adam is very handsome and slim. I'm not. I can't even button it up.
You are. Look at him button it up, boy.
So anyway, here we go. It's called Life is Shit by Adam Wyatt. My brother said over the phone, after 30-odd years of being alive, this was his assessment of it. I concurred, taking a moment to digest it, which took me back to when we were kids, sent to our room for being little shits. Bored, we took an empty biscuit tin from under the bed my brother squatted, dumped in it. I did the same, then inspected it. Our first science lesson, dissecting it with Lego bits, finding nuts and chocolate chips, taking it in our hands and playing with it, like funny clay or Christmas cake. Then, the inevitable, my brother being the oldest, dared me to try a bit. All mixed up now, not knowing which was which. I took a bite. How does it taste? My brother's grin filled his face. I was too young to know the old English term from Chaucer's day, but if I did, I'd say, like shit. Just then it hit the fan. Mum came in and saw my face covered in it. Chocolate spread? No! My lips painted thickly like a clown. Now we were really in it. Much older, I'd almost forgotten. But some mornings after the daily ritual, I get up, and before sending it down the pan, across our hometown, through the river, under the bridge where we play poo sticks, I take a look at it. And I'm reminded, apparently, it's good to do it. My doctor says you can tell what shape you are in, by the way, the shape of it. Long and firm is what you want. Small lumps or runny bits, you have to watch your diet. Which helped me find some other encouraging to tell my brother over the phone. Yes, I said, life is shit, but sometimes it's good to look at it.
Thank you, Andrew. Your Adam will be happy to hear his poem. He will be, yes, mate. He will be a great poem, actually. Next up, someone chanting the best of Irish poetry. It's a great book. If you would like to read a poem from it, you're more than welcome to. We've still got time in the open mic. We need two people left. Unless you'd like to jump in. So next up, please welcome a wonderful writer, has won fantastic awards and recently become very, I'm not going to embarrass her, Madeline Darcy.
Oh God, thanks very much. I'm trying to find the poem by, thank you.
We just want to hear you.
I found this poem by Dennis O'Driscoll, and I've never had the pleasure of meeting him. But I used to be a solicitor. I was not a great business-like solicitor, but I did my best. But back in the early 80s, when I tried to be a solicitor in Cork, things were very bad, and they are very bad again. But, well, I knew one bloke, like, Compo was a thing, it was the only ways we could get money. And a fellow I knew, unfortunately, he worked in a restaurant that shall not be named, and he fell down their hatch twice to break his leg, so he could sue them for money. And later on, he slept with a friend of mine and stole her guitar in the morning. He was not a nice person. But anyway, I found this poem by Dennis O'Driscoll, which is called Compo. And I hope to God that things are very bad for people now, but you cannot lower your standards to that extent. It is not good. But anyway, he's got a poem here called Compo. Be completely outraged, fuming, mad. Threaten to take your case to the highest tribunal in the land. Demand a proper compensation package. Counseling. The confidential helpline. Throw a tantrum. Go ballistic. Insist on full transparency. Accountability. Independent experts have shown. Consultants proved. It should all have been foreseen in the upper echelons. Hold up for answers for however long it takes. Draw the line. Give dogs abuse. Call for the politicians to do something. Get off their fat arses for once. There's absolutely no excuse. It's just not good enough in this day and age. They haven't heard the last. No way. Somebody has to take a rap. You're fed up to the teeth. Won't stand their crap 1 minute longer. Heads must roll.
Thank you, Madeline. Okay, no one's taking the bait. Fine. You can be a poet. Believe me, you can be a poet. Well, maybe it can be both. You are one or you're not one, right?
That's a
thing. Do you know Armageddon? Yeah, Armageddon. He said one in every two people is a poet. Most of them just don't know it. Until finally, thank you so much for coming. We would like to welcome to the open mic very exciting performer, Mr. Conor McManus.
Woo! Oh.
I'm not from Cork, so I had to make something up.
Where are you from? From Leitrim.
This is called the Cork Diary, or Mixed Messages. We were invited over for dinner on Sunday and arrived late, but just as the game began. My wife shouted for Cork. I shouted for Down. That's what you do when you're married. and Marty, a bandhead, was playing the Dumshambo Hustle. My wife thought the Down number 14 was good looking. All the northern boys are dark, she said. I know we are, I said. You're not from the north, she said. Near enough, I said, but it didn't seem to wash. I began to think she was just doing it because I'd been out all night drinking, and that's why we were late for the dinner. Because there wasn't much to it. I was beginning to think he wasn't even much of a footballer. She went on talking about him and got excited every time he got the ball. I started shouting for Cork. Over the chicken cacciatore we talked. We had issues with advertising in our daughter's homework journal, given out free by the school. Ads for hamburgers beside the healthy food pyramid. Jack and Elle, who cooked the organic chicken, said it was giving out mixed messages. All agreed, something would have to be done. The Tuesday after the Monday after the Sunday of the game, I went to the office to buy a new homework journal for my daughter, one without advertisements. I thought, what's the chances of bumping into Christodoulos Macris browsing in the poetry section? I couldn't help having a look, just on the off chance. We once had talked of Heaney and Healy and the American Psycho. He wasn't there, but on my way out I noticed two books shelved beside each other. One was called The Big Book of Hope, and the other was called Preparation for Death. more mixed messages, I thought. Outside, two guards and civvies sat on the thing, pretending the blue shirts are a dead giveaway. I smelt the noxious smell of 100 years worth of paint being burnt off a church door. Old men on the corner of Winthrop Street dropped words and names, Highball, Cadogan, Golding, and a young man said, by a point, to the back of his girlfriend's head as she looked into Brown Thomas's shop window. Overhead, Gill and Weston flew the red and white flag of Canada. He hardly put it up himself, though. Never even set foot in Cork, either. I walked a bit back up Panna and craned my neck to check to make sure it wasn't flying higher than the Tricolour. And then down I went by O'Brien's sandwich bar. I was robbed there for a sandwich and a tea 10 years ago. And I never darkened the door since. Oh, where are you now, Bobby Sweeney? Where are you now when we need you? Roll out time upon time as our ching-ching duro, and now you're gone like the snows of last winter. Hey, Brody, you fuck bag, any chance of the price of that tuna and white you owe me? I thought about a ham sandwich and a pint of port in the Long Valley, but it was too early for a sandwich. A street sweeper with luminous legs passed by pushing a red cart. A Japanese tourist wearing a red Nike baseball cap that was twice too big for him stood outside the GPO, wondering. Back at home that afternoon, I decided to do something about the homework journal issue. I did what I always do in these situations. I wrote a letter. And my wife did what she always does in these situations. She rewrote the letter. To make it sound polite, thank you.